Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Today we take a look back at the mysterious society that had such an extensive reach in this part of the country 1,000 years ago. Our guest wonders why more of us are not more curious about those responsible for the many mounds or pyramids they constructed before disappearing from the region. Mark Leach is described as a mound preservationist. He has put together a book titled The Great Pyramids of St. Louis, an Ancient Metropolis. Mark joins me in studio. Great to have you back again, Mark.
Oh, it's great to be here, Don. Thanks so much.
This is such a fascinating story. And as we were talking before going on the air, I'm fascinated by it, you're fascinated by it, but a lot of people apparently aren't.
I think saying something is the best kept secret is a little trite, yeah. But it's really true in this case. We think of ancient history as being far off exotic places, Rome, Athens, but this was the epicenter of something remarkable that happened about 1,000 years ago.
Well, before getting into some details about this society, let's get a couple of things in line first. I've heard them called Mississippians. I've heard them called Cahokians. And were they part of the Osage Indian Nation or not?
All very good questions. This culture that was centered in St. Louis really centered around Cahokia, so that's why it's oftentimes referred to as Cahokian. But actually what they've learned is that Cahokia, with its fortunately 80 earthen pyramids have been preserved there out of about 120 originally, that was only one district or borough of a massive three-district city that stretched all the way through East St. Louis with about 50 pyramids there across the river and into downtown St. Louis where there were an additional 25, 26 pyramids there. So that's why Cahokian. This spread outward as far as the Great Lakes down to the Gulf of Mexico, and it was always along rivers that these other cities and villages were built, and a lot of them along the Mississippi River. Thus, archaeologists often refer to the collective group as Mississippian.
And to the east, they extended all the way to the Appalachia, didn't they?
That's correct. Oh, and as far as the Osage, Nation, their tribe is in Oklahoma. They're one of several tribes that trace their connection, their ancestry to the pyramid builders in St. Louis.
What sort of connection, interconnectivity, did this group have? I mean, were they interacting with the people in Wisconsin or down near the Mexican border?
Yes, and actually, when it happened. You don't think in terms of scenes from Dances with Wolves, of people in teepees living in harmony with each other in nature. What happened in St. Louis about 1,000 years ago had never happened before. There had never been anything like it north of Mexico. And when it exploded, it happened in a big way. And people from all over the mid-continent literally left their villages, picked up their things, and moved to St. Louis to be a part of it. So population before that tipping point was maybe several thousand in this area, and at its peak rose to 50 or 60,000.
What did happen? Was there a single event that happened that caused this coming together?
Well, there was a kind of a culmination of things that were trending in that direction. People in the area had started building small plazas in their villages and maybe a couple small earthen pyramids and that were kind of prototypical of what Cahokia and Greater Cahokia would become. You also had a large mound center down in Arkansas that they had 18 pyramids, and some of their pottery starts to show up in this area at around the time of 1054 AD. And then something happened that may have been the trigger. On July 4th, 1054 AD, a star exploded in the sky, creating the Crab Nebula, and it was many, many times brighter than a normal star. It was visible even during the daytime. And some archaeologists speculate, and some archaeologists are not comfortable speculating, but some are. They think that a savvy leader or group of local leaders seized upon that celestial event to say, aha, this proves that we are a deity or a son of a deity. Mm-hmm. And then things change dramatically. That's when massive construction projects start and population begins to swell. And this thing held together for several hundred years.
When did this society actually disappear? Because that's one of the great mysteries of this area.
Right. We know that by the 1300s, the pyramids are pretty much deserted. At around in the 1200s, you start to see evidence of warfare and massive fires. Outlying cities are getting burned to the ground. There was also a massive flood in the area at the time. And plus, you start to see around the three main cities, Cahokia, East St. Louis, and we think in downtown St. Louis, construction of massive walls. The one around Cahokia, which started at about that time where this warfare is happening, it was 2 miles in length, encircling the center, the most elite part of the city. And each time they built it, it required hand chopping down 20,000 trees from the upland forest that would then be transported down to build this wall. And that's just one of the many, many massive civic projects that were going on.
These are walls to keep invaders out, that sort of thing, as opposed to keeping floodwaters out.
Well, they think two things, to keep invaders out, because there were bastions that were built that projected out from the wall. So it would have any invaders, archers from those bastions would have had clear shots of anyone trying to penetrate the wall. And like some medieval castles, some of the gates that you would go through a bastion did a zigzag or an L, which would then have any invaders caught in a crossfire. So defensive, probably, but also you may have had a lot of common people who were pretty upset when things weren't going as well. With warfare, maybe shortages. There had been a change in the weather that made the growing season a little shorter. So there may have been shortages of food, and maybe the walls were also to keep rioting citizens from entering the most holy part of the cities.
Is there a chance that illness could have played a part?
Probably so. Like in most cultures that make a transition from hunter-gatherer lifestyles to full-blown agriculture, corn helped feed the people, but it lacked a lot of nutritional value. So the quality of health most definitely went down over time.
Is there any evidence of the walls today?
Yes. There are archaeologists from different universities out at Cahokia Mounds every summer conducting field work, and much of that is devoted to finding different parts of the walls.
Well, the main thing is the mounds, and that's much of what your book, The Great Pyramids of St. Louis, all about. What do we know about the mounds? What the heck were they?
Well, think in terms of the stone pyramids in Egypt. Leaders tend to like to build monuments to themselves or to their dead ancestors. And in Egypt, they had sand and stone, some soil along the Nile. But here, the people here, they had a lot of choices on what to build with, plenty of wood, plenty of soil, plenty of stone, and they chose soil to make their pyramids.
So what were the pyramids?
Well, they were monuments, much like the Gateway Arch is a monument, but they were also burial chambers. Burial chamber in the largest mound in St. Louis, it was the last surviving one in downtown, called Big Mound. Burial was uncovered there with exotic treasures and people who had been entombed in there, presumably elite leaders of that district of the city.
So there again is a connection with Egypt, even though it's about 8,000 or 9,000 miles away.
Right, no strange conspiracy theories or anything needed on there. People are pretty similar across the globe in how they honor their leaders and how they bury their leaders. And the monuments they construct to show their collective greatness.
Any evidence of the mounds in downtown St. Louis at all today? Any remnants at all?
When the Stan Musial Veterans Memorial Bridge was being constructed, they looked around and they really couldn't find anything there. They were pretty much all leveled to, as the city was growing. They were leveled. The last one, I think they used it as fill soil to build a railroad extension in that area of the city.
Did the people who were doing that, destroying, know what they were doing?
Oh, yes, very much so. And they fortunately, there were local newspaper reporters who recorded in great detail what was being found during the destruction of the mounds. And that is true of some of the large cemetery mounds in East St. Louis as well.
You know, I watched yesterday. I watched the film that you wrote. Forgive me for getting the name. It was on the Archaeological Channel.
Right.
What's the name of
it? It's Uncovering Ancient St. Louis.
Yeah. Sorry for having forgotten that. People can watch that online, by the way.
Yes.
But what fascinated me about that was the fact that many of the mounds that we know about were constructed over caves and caverns. And that's, you know, something's going on there.
Right. And caves, in general terms, what we know of what these people believed is that they divided their world into three realms. One was an underworld, and that was accessed through caves or water. The second was a middle world where we live with the animals. And the third was a sky realm or an upper world. And we have to be careful that we don't say, oh, that's just like Judeo-Christianity, because it wasn't a heaven and hell type of concept. It was just three realms where good and evil beings existed in each realm. And we think that their religion was involving the practice of trying to keep those three levels in balance. And
go ahead. No, go, you finish your thought.
So we know from at least two sites in Missouri that there are caves that contain Native American rock art. And that's where the St. Louis district of Greater Cahokia City comes into play, because those mounds were built right on top of a vast network of caves. And so if there were artwork in other caves associated with mounds and associated with these people, these caves under St. Louis must have been just riddled with cave art.
And you can't get to all of them?
Well, unfortunately, most of those caves were quarried out to use for limestone or for the many, many breweries that were around St. Louis to help keep the lager cool.
You must just be wringing your hands over all of this, the treasure trove that is just gone.
Well, I'm a glass half full person. Fortunately, there are a lot of pyramids and sites have been preserved, and I tend to focus on that and just trying to let people know of what this amazing ancient civilization was all about right here in their own hometown.
Well, we'll come back and talk more about that and some of the things that you have found that helped to explain what was going on and why during this time period that we've been talking about. My guest is Mark Leach. He's an author. He's a mounds preservationist is one of the titles that we can give him, and also the author of The Great Pyramids of St. Louis. We'll come back to continue our conversation. If you have any expertise on this subject or questions that you have concerning the mounds or pyramids of Cahokia and the region, give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org, or if you would prefer, send us a tweet at STL on Air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back now to Mark Leach, the author of The Great Pyramids of St. Louis. Before we continue, I'll point out that Mark has a signing and presentation titled The Great Pyramids of St. Louis, oddly enough, on Tuesday, December 5th at 7 p.m. at the Missouri History Museum. So if you're enjoying this conversation, much more to come on December 5th at 7 o'clock at the Missouri History Museum. How sophisticated a group were I'll call them Mississippians. How sophisticated?
Well, a prime example of that is that, say, downtown Cahokia, that borough of this greater city, people assumed it was aligned according to cardinal directions. But archaeologists kept seeing that everything's aligned 5 degrees off of north. And they thought, well, maybe they just weren't that great at surveying. What they actually found is that alignment aligns to and somewhat obscure lunar event that happens every 18.6 years. So that gives you one example of just how sophisticated they were.
And in terms of their society, I mean, and governance and commerce?
Yeah, we assume that they had, lack of a better word, a king and queen, probably or possibly a group of elite leaders. And then they had artisans and politicians, people who specialized in trades and arts. Their artwork was amazing. In fact, I dedicate 100 pages in the book to their artwork, which includes their oral tradition, jewelry, fabrics, as well as amazing statuary.
Yeah, the artifacts that have been collected, I mean, are numerous. And how much do they tell us? I mean, we can see faces and shapes and form. Tells us something.
Right. We see a lot about – and when you look at the artwork and then pair it with research that is done with some of the oral traditions of tribes that are associated with here, such as the Osage, that helps us to make sense of their artwork. And you see – I talked about those three levels of the lower world, the middle world, the upper world. You see that in their artwork quite a bit, especially there's a people have heard about the Piasaw bird in the, oh, sure. The rock art near Alton. Actually, the original one, as sketched by Marquette, didn't have wings. It was it was actually something that we call the underwater panther or underwater monster. This was a beast with antlers, teeth, claws, and a great serpent-like tail. And that beast is pictured quite a bit in their artwork.
And isn't there a drawing of it on a rock surface somewhere? A huge depiction of it?
There was originally two of them painted on the bluffs in Alton. Those are long gone now. There's an artistic rendering. There are at least two caves in Missouri, and I've been able to go down in one of them for a documentary where there are depictions of this underwater creature. Yeah. And one of the caves, we think it was visited by one or two teenage boys, they're all alone on a rite of passage type thing. And I just can't imagine venturing down there. And this was a cave that was also frequented by mountain lions and bears. And here you're probably thinking, I'm going to face this underwater creature as well. Very brave young folks.
And the depictions of it are fairly consistent, even in various places. That looks pretty much the same each time.
That's correct. Right,
okay.
Right.
We have a tweet here from Cipriano who asks, has Cahokia Mound ever been scanned with a radar to see if there are any hidden items within?
Right now, from my understanding, is that the technology just doesn't exist to get very far down into the surface. About 10 years back, there was a major erosion episode that exposed a significant section of the mound, of the greatest pyramid, Monk's Mound. And they were able to learn quite a bit from that in their repairs. What they learned is that they had thought that this, obviously, it's a massive monument. They estimated it took 57 million 50-pound basket loads of soil to build that. They assumed that must have taken hundreds of years. Their research found that, no, it is a matter of decades, like 10, 20 years to build that massive monument.
You know, the reason we know so much about the pyramids and the society of the time was because people were writing things down. Did these folks write anything?
If they had a written language, it didn't survive the test of time. It would have been on animal skins or painted on wooden panels, that sort of thing. So not that we know of.
Let's take some calls. We have Susie who wants to join us from Rock Hill. Susie, thank you for being with us. Go ahead. You're on the air with Mark Leach.
Oh, you're very welcome. What a fascinating subject. I am very curious to know, since you haven't disturbed these wonderful pieces of architecture, really, how are you able to figure out so many things about them? What are your methods, and how do you know how many of them and where they are located, given what modern man has done to the area?
Very good question. As far as the location, fortunately, a lot of the early settlers to St. Louis were fascinated by these and drew detailed maps. In fact, Robert E. Lee, when he was stationed at Jefferson Barracks, drew a map when he was doing work to save the port of St. Louis from silting over that included some of the St. Louis pyramids. Unfortunately, we know a lot from these mounds by studying them as they were being destroyed. Early accounts from newspaper reporters, and even in modern times, there's a shopping center in Fenton that was destroyed to make way for a shopping center there. Two pyramids were destroyed, and they had archaeologists go in, and they uncovered, I believe, 97 human remains just in those two pyramids alone.
That it, Susie?
That's wonderful.
Good. Thank you for the call. Overall, how many pyramids and mounds, if you will, were in this area?
If we talk about Greater Cahokia, so Cahokia itself, they think about 120 earthen pyramids. Then traveling down a road to East St. Louis were also mounds lining that road. And then in East St. Louis district, there were 45 to 50 mounds kind of in an arc facing the St. Louis mound district, which was across the river, where there were 25 or 26 mounds there.
So totaling about, what, 120 or something like that?
Well, and then you go out to outlying areas. In Forest Park alone, I think there were 16 earthen pyramids there.
Well, that's another one that surprised the heck out of me in your book, that Forest Park had, as you indicated, a number of the mounds.
Well, and oddly enough, they were destroyed to make way for the World's Fair, which also featured Native Americans as one of their exhibits. And if you could turn back time, you'd say, well, how about showing these earthen pyramids off as a good Native American exhibit?
Is there any, if any new ones were found, which I guess is unlikely, but is there, of those that exist, is there any law or that would prevent people from damaging them in any way?
In Illinois, yes. They do a much better job of preserving Native American sites there. In Missouri, it pretty much is limited to that if there's federal funding involved, or if it involves altering a floodplain, then archaeology is required. But sometimes there are 11 earthen pyramids along 141 near Parkway Central that I worked with the MoDOT archaeologist and just showed them where they were, and they were able to simply alter the right-of-way by a few feet and preserve all 11. And people drive right by one of those thousands of people every day without knowing that it's an earthen pyramid.
How far do they extend? I mean, we talked about the society all the way to Appalachia and to the prairie and to Wisconsin, or the Great Lakes and to Mexico.
Right, yeah, down to Texas, Florida. Right.
Mounds all everywhere?
Right. And some small villages, some were major mound centers.
I'm sort of struck by the societal aspect of this. We talked about hunters, gatherers, and then they became agriculture, more of the gatherers. What did they wear?
That's a great question. So don't think in terms of hides and things. I do in the chapter on artwork, I include textiles as an art. Yeah. And they've found that they could weave textiles as coarse as rope, or maybe using the down from milkweed pods as soft and fine as silk. The men probably were wearing a skirt or a kilt. Right. And in warm season, and nicely made footwear, and women definitely were probably wearing a skirt as well.
You know, you talked earlier about the wall and the bastion set up, for defensive purposes. Who would have been the enemy?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah. It's one that you get four archaeologists in a room, and you'll end up with five answers to that. Yeah. Some think that maybe as Cahokia grew and grew, Greater Cahokia, the three-part city, they became more and more dependent on these outlying affiliated cities. And maybe some of the outlying cities decided, hey, we don't want to keep paying tribute to this capital. Let's challenge them. So it may have been them. It may have been people who were pushed out of the area when this whole thing took place back in 1054 AD, who just never bought into whatever their great leader was selling. You know, we don't believe this guy's this woman or man is a deity. Yeah. And
it probably had an economic component, as most of these things do.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And the amount of trade flowing through Greater Cahokia, the pyramids of St. Louis, it was stunning because people were coming to the site from all over the mid-continent. Just one grand feast at Cahokia proper. In one feast, nearly 4,000 deer were killed and butchered and eaten. And that one feast produced 1 million tobacco seeds. So they smoked a very powerful tobacco that in large quantities may have been hallucinogenic.
I was going to ask
so
if that
quite,
was...
quite a feast there.
quite a party.
Right.
We have an email from Jacqueline here relating to the Mounds and Forest Park who asks, was the art museum, as rumor will tell us, was the art museum built on a burial mound?
Very near the art museum, just east of the art museum, I think were seven mounds, pyramids there. And then down along where the basin was put in, I believe there were nine pyramids down there. So not directly under the art museum, but go to the art museum because they have an incredible exhibit of Mississippian art right now. Some of the just beautiful statuaries are there right now.
Did they do any art, more traditional type of art, painting, that sort of thing?
Yes, very colorful people. The inside of their homes was made from a very smooth plaster that was oftentimes coated with a very vibrant red paint. Mm-hmm. So it must have been quite shocking and apparently very, very colorful.
We have another caller. Tom joins us from Webster Groves. Tom, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Yes. Don, you have the most interesting people on. I look forward to tuning in.
Great.
My question goes to in both directions in time. As to the range, you were pretty descriptive of what the range was. Back in the 1980s, I was part of something called the UMSL Public Archaeology Research or a Survey Team, and they were finding mounds along the Missouri River on both sides, extending to the northwest. And then, of course, there are the mounds, the effigy mounds that run up the Mississippi River. My question really goes both ways.
Very quickly, if you would, Tom.
Extent that way. And then which tribes alive today could trace their descendancy to these populations?
Thank you. We have about 30 seconds for the
sure.
answer.
All right. So there are earthen pyramids along all the major waterways, Merrimack, Missouri. I actually adopted a Native American burial mound in Chesterfield on the bluffs there that had been suffering from looting damage. We work closely with the Osage, but I do think that there are some other tribes that can also trace their lineage to Cahokia. Yeah.
There's so much more to learn, obviously. There are many, many questions, but so many things we couldn't get to today because of time limitations. Mark Leach, thank you so much for being with us. Once again, we'll remind folks that the title of your book is The Great Pyramids of St. Louis, an Ancient Metropolis, and Mark is going to be at the Missouri History Museum on December 5th at 7 o'clock, and he'll be talking about just what we've been talking about. I hope we generated more interest
for
a lot of reasons.
I think we did. Thanks so much, Don.
Thank you so much, Mark Leach. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.